On second down, air it out, Deontay Harris. He's got it, touchdown, another for Winston.
That is Jameis Winston, leading the New Orleans Saints in an obliteration of the Green Bay Packers. Maybe the most stunning development in a Sunday full of them. And today, we walk you through what it was like to watch a national holiday at this point, with our hand-picked roster of NFL veterans turned analysts turned friends of the show. Alex Smith, the just-retired quarterback of the Washington football team, the undefeated Dominique Foxworth, and Monday Night Football's Louis Riddick. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, September 13th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. Alex Smith, man, first off, your tie is loosened. Let's start there. You've just spent your first Sunday as my teammate now at ESPN. You were last season's NFL Comeback Player of the Year. We all know that incredible story, but I believe this was the first time in 25 years you have not been playing football or rehabbing for football. So how did it all feel for you personally just being out there and not being out there?
Yeah, you're right. It's been 25 years. This fall that I haven't been doing football in some fashion or another, or been in the training camp. Incredibly different, but awesome. I had a lot of people reach out to me, a lot of my close family and friends, you know, this last week, and they're like, "Hey, we're thinking about you. How are you doing?" And I was honestly, I'm so at peace with the way my career ended, and obviously grateful that I ever was able to even make it back and to be doing what I'm doing, and you know, to still be around the game in some other capacity. I still had butterflies this morning. So that was amazing, you know, and looking forward to this challenge. It's fun.
Absolutely. And we're grateful that we get to now mine your brain, a brain that has been attempting to consume. Well, you've been attempting to consume all of these games in ways that I have been doing for years now. That is the part that is new for you. What is not new for you is thinking about quarterbacks. I want to start with the guy who would win MVP if voting was conducted before sunset today, because Kyler Murray, man, just went and dominated the Tennessee Titans. That is a playoff team that a lot of people think have real Super Bowl potential. He throws for 289 yards, 4 touchdowns. He runs for another. So let's just start as a quarterback here. What did Kyler Murray do today that impressed you the most?
Nothing that surprised me. You know, through weeks 8 to 10 last season, you know, if we'd have stopped and did an MVP trophy at that point, I think Kyler was on a very short list. I mean, he's doing things that haven't been done in this league in a long time. You know, talking about throwing the ball the way he does and then combining it with his ability to run as well.
Murray stops on a dime, rolls to the far side, not much is there, steps back and throws, and it's caught by Moore! What a catch, what a play by Kyler Murray!
I mean, a few of the plays he made, scrambling around and
insane,
you know, human joystick back there at the quarterback position. I'm not sure there's ever been a guy with that kind of tool set running around making those plays. So it was fun to watch. The Titans were a team that, you know, Vrabel, there's the head coach, they're going to get better on defense this offseason. That was kind of the talk. And to see them just get exposed like that, you know, I think caught a lot of people off guard. But again, Kyler's got a ton of ability, and that's what makes him special. And they certainly play to that in that offense.
Yeah, so another person that you know well from your time escaping defenders in the league is Chandler Jones, man. I mean, that's the Cardinals defensive end. He chased you around for years. He had 5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles in this game alone. That degree of dominance, what opened your eyes about that?
It's rare, first of all. You know, he's a guy that I think because of his injury, he's kind of flown under the radar. You know, he was off to a great start last year, too, before he got hurt. But to just see him feasting out there like that, man, against Taylor Lewan, I mean, he's not going against, you know, just Joe Schmo over there. That's a Pro Bowl left tackle that he beat up consistently today.
It's fourth down, Tannehill, and he's wrapped up and taken down from behind.
Guess who?
Chandler Jones again. That is number 5 for Chandler Jones.
Again, that's not a total surprise either. He has that kind of elite talent. But again, he's just kind of flown under the radar. The injury, we're talking about all these other names, you know, Nick Bosa's back and Chase Young and all these other edge guys, these young guys, and certainly Chandler, I think, made himself heard today, no doubt, across the NFL. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a guy that dominant
Alex, you are smiling a little bit, smiling the smile of a person who does not have to play against Chandler Jones this year.
No doubt. Yep.
What was he like when you played against him?
He's so, you know, the crazy thing is he's just so long. I mean, you think there's a lot of times, you know, you throw, you know, from tight pockets as a quarterback and you think you're safe and you got to stand in there and deliver. Chandler could be 2.5 yards away from you and you could get a sack fumble if you pull the ball back to go throw. I mean, he's that long.
Tannehill pressure from behind, lost the football. It was Jones again that came from the backside and knocked the ball loose. It'll be Arizona football.
And then I just think his background of obviously speed, but he being able to bend and have that kind of power around the edge for a tall guy is incredibly unique to have that combination.
Yeah. So I want to move on here to one of your former teams we'll talk about today in the 49ers, because this experiment that they enter the season with, you know, they're trying to do a 2-quarterback system. I'm fascinated by it. They debuted it on the second series of the game against the Lions, perhaps just because there was a turnover on the first series. We see Jimmy Garoppolo throw a pass, then Trey Lance come in to run the ball, and then Jimmy comes back in to throw a pass, and then Trey Lance throws the first touchdown pass of the season for this team.
Lance, off the play fake, first pass, and it's a touchdown! Trent Sherfield on the receiving end of Trey Lance's first career NFL touchdown pass.
It was the only one he attempted in the end because Garoppolo went on to throw over 300 yards as the Niners held on to win this thing 41-33. But what did this specific game tell you about the experiment we're talking about?
Oh, I think that it's doable and that it's a success. I think there's a lot of layers to this to make something like this work. I think one is that you have a guy that can actually help the team. And I think Trey Lance can do that. He's that type of gifted athlete. I think he can come in these big situations, particularly red zone, particularly short yardage and goal line, where a dual threat quarterback can be so effective. I mean, I think we've seen that the last 10 years. I mean, I think the greatest red zone short yardage threat in the history of the football is Cam Newton, you know? So to see a guy like Trey that has that kind of ability and be able to come in and help his team, that's the first and foremost. I think the second thing is it adds an element to this already potent offense that defenses have to get ready for now, you know? Instead of thinking about Deebo Samuel and George Kittle, now they're getting ready and practicing and preparing and spending time through their week getting ready for this, you know, Trey Lance package. And then I think the third thing that's not going to, you know, doesn't get talked about a ton is what incredible, valuable experience this is for Trey Lance. As opposed to sitting there cold the entire time, and certainly he's the quarterback of the future and his time would come. But here he is. He gets to have situational experience in spots to come in and get these valuable reps and to develop. You know, I just think over the course of the year, think about how many reps he's going to get to be able to kind of, I think, shake all that early jitters and things you have off as a young player, and to be able to kind of put all that aside and come in here and there in spots and roles and help your team win and contribute. I think it's great. And I think Kyle can handle it too. Kyle Shanahan. I think it starts at the top.
Well, you know, your vantage point on this is particularly valuable, Alex, because you have been the guy who has been ahead of very mobile, dual-threat quarterbacks. You yourself like to run, but you were backed up by Colin Kaepernick very famously in San Francisco, then by Mahomes in Kansas City, who just called you selfless in a sit-down you had with him today on ESPN. How much is the psychology of the people involved key to all of this? Because I think about the idea of, you know, if you have 2 quarterbacks, you don't have one. That old aphorism, right? I think about the competition that every fan and media member, I think, intentionally or not, ends up thrusting upon a situation that can feel like an audition. So how much does psychology play into how this can all go well or poorly?
No, it's big. It's really big. And I think that's why I go back to Kyle and communicating this. I think when everybody knows that they're on the same page and everybody knows what's coming and it's the expectation levels aren't off and nobody's, you know, getting their feelings hurt or anything like that. When the team is first, I mean, I think that's the way it should be. And I think Kyle will handle it that way. So I think that kind of plays into that psychology. I've been in very, very similar situations where, yeah, I mean, I felt like I was a good athlete at quarterback, but certainly there were times we brought in Cap because he could do things that I couldn't. And for me as a quarterback, in the end, you get evaluated on wins and losses. So for Jimmy, I mean, yeah, he came in and threw the first touchdown pass, but it's only helping you. I mean, if you're winning games, you're gonna remain the starter. And I thought Jimmy played great today, but I thought it worked out perfect. I mean, Trey came in and in a big situation, the first red zone of the season to set the tone. And then the value of that, the confidence that he'll take with him. This is a guy that played one game in college last year. You know, he only played 17 in total. So I think to continue his development like this is I think it's great.
Yeah. So another quarterback who invites all sorts of questions is Josh Allen. And I switched to him now because last year, Alex, he was a real MVP candidate. He was more accurate than he'd ever been in his whole life. The Bills were second in total offense. This is an AFC title game team. And then they lose today at home against a Steelers team. And did any of it make you think that last season for Josh Allen might have been somewhat anomalous?
I don't think that. Certainly, I get the question, and it's been in his past. And today probably looked more like his rookie year than it did last year, when he very well could have been the MVP. I mean,
yes,
he played amazing last year. I think this year, I think this game today certainly was a much bigger characteristic of the first game of the season. I thought they came out flat. I thought they all kind of came out expecting Josh just to go out there and roll, you know, by himself. Hey, we're just going to throw the ball 50 some odd times, and Josh is just going to take care of business by himself. And I also think you've got to give a huge hats off to the Steelers defense. The Steelers defense has been dominant for decades now. They are so tough to play against. They won a game today. The Steelers offense had 250 yards of offense. They had a blocked kick for a touchdown, and they won on the road at Buffalo, a team that most people have picked to win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Or go to it at least. So a huge win for the Steelers. Obviously, their defense carried the load. You know, Ben made some great throws, I thought, down the line. But I think it was more telling about that. I think the Bills are going to find their way. I think they're too good. They got too many weapons. And I think Josh Allen's the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, that crowd in Buffalo, Alex, they were silent for a big portion of this. And
they were leaving early. And
leaving early, doing all of that. And I think a lot of it, if you're going to pick an individual on the Steelers defense that you just praised, you pick T.J. Watt. And look, he's a guy, Alex, another human being who tried to terrorize you in the league. He is now the highest paid defensive player in the league. Well, what did today's game say to you about the contract that he just signed?
I mean, has he been practicing all camp? He hasn't. He's just been, you know, lifting weights and staying in shape. And then he practices a week, and then to go watch him terrorize again, you know, obviously Josh Allen and that offense.
Allen hit from behind. T.J. Watt, the ball is free.
I just was reminded, we played them last year, and I remember looking at the stat sheet, not just sacks, which obviously I think at that point he was leading the NFL, but when you looked at like pressures, hurries, and QB hits, it wasn't even close how far ahead he is than everybody from last season. And that's just the kind of the effect he has, play in, play out, run pass. I mean, he is tough to go against. So yeah, I'm glad I wasn't back there having to go against it again. Anytime you go against a defense like that, and a guy like TJ, it's a long day. You know you're going to have to stand in there, and you know you're going to take a lot of shots.
Yeah, so let's go to where you played last season. Let's go to Washington now, because they lost another longtime veteran quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick, a friend of our show, Alex Smith. So he is knocked out of the game. Taylor Heinicke comes in, and that is a guy in Heinicke that you played with last year. He came in for you in the playoffs against Tampa, came in and surprised people by moving the ball pretty damn well. And he has only two career starts in the NFL. He went undrafted out of Old Dominion. What should people know about Taylor Heinicke now?
I remember hearing about Taylor when he was like his second year in the league, and he was this undrafted guy out of where? Old Dominion? Is that where he went?
Yes.
Is that
yes,
where he
for
went?
The record, Old
but
Dominion. Yes.
I think Taylor's had this ability in him. I think the key has always been for Taylor to stay healthy. He has battled a bit of the injury bug over the course of his career, but I think it's really a credit to his talent. You know, and I mean that even from work ethic and mentally, that he stuck around and just even see how he came in last year off the couch and played at the end of the season was really fun to watch. But yeah, I think I wasn't shocked how Taylor played today at all. I mean, he has been in that offense for a long time. He's been with Scott Turner maybe his whole career. And so he knows the offense incredibly well. He's a really gifted athlete. You know, you saw him get in there and he didn't skip a beat. He was decisive, made some great throws. Taylor played good enough to win the ballgame today. Now, defensively, that Washington defense didn't show up today, especially on third down. I think they gave up 14 of 18 conversions or something, especially those last two drives. It was just tough to watch. So I know they got a lot to learn from and get better from, but a long road ahead. But yeah, I like Taylor. I think he's got a big future. Obviously, don't know what next week will look like, you know, with Fitzy or him as far as the injury report. So, but certainly not shocked by his play. and I won't be going forward because he's that kind of player.
Yeah, just on how you process seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick get hurt. I'm just curious, how do you see that? What does your vantage point provide you in terms of background knowledge that maybe the rest of us miss when something like that happens in a game?
Yeah, Ryan and I, we're draft mates. You know, we were the same class.
That's right. That's right.
Aaron and Fitzy, the only two left at this point. So it was tough. I mean, at first I thought it was his shoulder, to be honest. He took a really big hit. Oftentimes when you get driven into the ground, that's really when the injuries happen. And then, you know, saw a different angle of the tackle and you could see that his knee kind of got stuck and that it ended up being his hip that was bothering him. So I haven't heard anything other than that. But yeah, you're feeling for him, you know. He's worked hard, played a long time, played a lot of balls. You're hoping that his health is okay, one, and that he can get back and make the most of this opportunity. That's kind of what's going through my head at that point.
The Washington football team, your Washington football team, very recently, Alex, you said this morning that this is the class of the division. Do you still feel that strongly after watching them against the Chargers today?
But right before I made that statement, I said, I think the NFC East is incredibly underrated. I think that the entire division is going to shock a lot of people this year. I know last year was a bit of a mess, and I think there were a lot of reasons for it. You know, you had three first-year coaches, COVID, Dak got hurt. I think there were a lot of reasons why last year was what it was. I think this year they are underrated. I think the entire division is going to shock a lot of people across the board. I still do think Washington is. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to flip after 1 week here. I think they have a ton of depth. I think they're going to get it figured out, get it going. I think they have the deepest roster. But I do think the whole division is much more talented than people give it credit for.
Alex Smith, a rookie analyst after 25 years of nonstop football. Thank you for displaying veteran savvy in your debut with us on ESPN Daily.
Pablo, thanks, man. Looking forward to this.
We'll do it again. All right, coming up, Dominique Foxworth shepherds us through the rest of Sunday.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Dominique Foxworth, you are many things. You are a writer for The Undefeated. You are my friend on television. You're a former NFL cornerback, blah, blah, blah. You're also the guy I trained for parenting advice. And so today, I violated the screen time rules I had set for Violet, my 18-month-old daughter, more than I ever have, because I had three screens going, which meant that she was just inhaling all of this. And I just feel like a terrible parent, as much as I love what we're doing here, talking about all the things I just inhaled.
Screen time rules are off until COVID's gone. I thought you didn't get that in the parent memo. Until we eradicate COVID, the coronavirus, there's no such thing as screen time rules. So rest easy, young Pablo. You're doing the best that you can, just like the rest of us.
Yeah, when Violet asks me, why am I addicted to screens? I'll just tell her, look, there's a pandemic, and also Baker Mayfield was doing things to Patrick Mahomes for like three quarters.
I mean, let's be honest. 20 years from now, Violet's going to be like, Daddy, why am I not addicted to screens? Like, isn't that where the entire society is going? You're only preparing her for the world that she's going to enter.
Yeah, or we'll live in a post-apocalyptic dystopia where we're just cavemen again, scratching sticks and stones together to make fire. So there is
football.
That.
Let's be happy.
Yeah. So look, let's get to the football and the reason why I am a bad parent.
Yes.
I want to start with how this day started for Baker Mayfield, because he started by posting a hype video for himself on the internet for the many haters and losers who doubted him. And I love, by the way, that your face popped up in this. Although
I wasn't a hater or a loser.
You were just watching Eric Mangini, our other colleague, former Jets GM, be a hater and a loser. And it looked like hating and losing was going to be the thing that he could crow about. But he goes out there, he goes and looks legitimately great for a time. And then the team falls apart around him. And then he falls apart too, because he seemingly tries to throw it away with like a little over a minute left in the game. His foot gets stuck. He throws the game-ending interception. And so a very close and awesome game ends in a familiar way, which is with the Browns losing by a score, though, of 33-29. So how do you grade a day like that?
Well, I mean, B minus, but I think the interesting thing is that when you're going through all that, it just hit me for the first time that you're a writer and you would really appreciate how great the symmetry is, or the symbolism in this game is for Baker Mayfield's entire career. Like in every important game in his career, this has happened. And also the arc of his career, this is kind of it. Like he came out like fast on that Thursday night game. He scored a bunch and played well. And we were like, Baker's going to be the man. And then it came down to the end, or the more recent portion of his career, and also the more high-pressure situations, and he can't execute as well in those moments. And that's what happened today. That's kind of the story of Baker Mayfield. He was awesome. And then in the fourth quarter, he had a QBR of 16.
Ugh. Yeah, I feel like he signed like five commercial contracts at halftime and then came out and it was like, oh, right, about that.
I'm a fan of separating Baker's commercials from Baker the player, because Baker is an awesome actor. I love his commercials.
Oh, yeah. We should separate art from the artist there. He is probably the best commercial actor we've had in sports memory, I think. But look, okay, so Patrick Mahomes, he is 27 of 36 in this game. He has three passing touchdowns. He has another rushing touchdown, the kind where he's touched by nobody, and it's just like, okay, what are we even doing here? 355 total yards, man. So what is watching Mahomes like for you at this point?
I mean, it's a religious experience. it's really incredible. And it's a funny thing that even like my wife, who's like aware of football, but she doesn't watch it very often. Sorry to hit you with the stereotypes.
Ashley, I see you as a full three-dimensional person, for the record.
She was like, I walked past the screen and I saw that they were down by like 12. And I was like, they'll come back. And then she came back towards the end of the game and they came back. Like, that's, we're at this point where Patrick Mahomes is like a cultural experience that everyone knows about.
If you wanted to scare the Chiefs fans into, you know, having some concern about what is to come, because this was a close game, what do you tell them?
I would like to summarily reject it once again. I don't know. Tell them I heard Patrick coughing. I don't know. It looked like he was limping. That's the only way to scare them, because I think that you might argue we could scare Chiefs fans by pointing out how bad their defense was for much of this game.
Yeah.
However, the problem is, no matter how bad your defense is, Patrick is so good that he'll make the other defense worse than your defense. And that Browns defense is chock full of Pro Bowlers.
So good.
Guys that people think are the best at their position. Young guys that are super talented. They are really, really good. And it don't matter, because Patrick is going to make the other team look so much worse.
So I want to ask you how one particular Browns defender must have been feeling, because I was watching Ronnie Harrison, who I truly just learned about today, in full transparency here, get ejected for open hand shoving a Chiefs assistant on the sideline. The Chiefs assistant had pushed him first, for the record, because Ronnie Harrison had stepped on slash gotten tangled, perhaps totally accidentally. A Chiefs player on the ground got all mixed up with him on the sideline. What did you think as you watched that specific physical altercation?
I thought that when someone's glasses get knocked askew, it's hilarious.
Yeah, when you look like a grandpa who's read a shocking headline, it doesn't feel like I can take you very seriously. When you're channeling the spirit of like a scientist who just looked into a beaker that just puffed up smoke. It's just sort of like,
that was mad scientist. That was definitely mad scientist, like sloppy scientist who mixed the wrong chemicals and it's just, that his glasses go. We should make so much fun of this because Harrison was kicked out of the game unfairly, in my opinion. Like, I felt like it was unfair.
And he'll probably be fined, and that suspension meeting will be far more serious than what we just described it as. But I want to turn to the other enormous game that I was all in on, because, and I'm curious if you were too, because what Aaron Rodgers did in throwing two interceptions, zero touchdowns, just going 15 of 28 against the New Orleans Saints, Dominique, he threw five interceptions all of last season. And I just want to know if you think that Aaron Rodgers is maybe washed now. What happened here?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's a lot. You can't go to washed after he was MVP last year. You can't go washed off of one bad game. Like, I am a fan of the overreaction, but I feel like you're doing a little too much. Like, I feel like the next step is he throwing the game because he's still so mad at the coaches and the general manager? Like, that you're at that level.
He wants the Jeopardy job. He wants the Jeopardy job so bad. He is tanking games in season.
He seemed uncomfortable. And that's what happens when it feels like you can't trust your offensive line and the Saints front is ferocious. And I thought that that Chris Richard, the defensive backs coach, the new defensive back coach for the Saints, had a good scheme for them to stop the passing attack. They doubled Adams quite a bit. And Marshawn Lattimore even left the game for a stretch with a bit of an injury, but they still kind of kept all their receivers pretty well covered. And Aaron Rodgers is accurate enough normally to even complete balls against well-covered guys. But in this situation, when you're also getting pressured and then you look up and you're down by a ton, it's tough to come back when things get rolling.
Yeah, so look, as a former defensive back, as someone who rides for that point of view on the field, how satisfying was this to watch? Because, I mean, what the Saints defense did, as you just alluded to, they humiliated the most accurate quarterback I think we've ever seen. I mean, there were shots of Aaron Rodgers, long hair and all, on the sideline, just sort of staring into the middle distance, just miserably. He watched as Jordan Love made his debut, going 5 of 7 for 68 yards in garbage time. I'm just curious how satisfying that is for a former DB.
Well, I mean, I love all turnovers. I played against Aaron Rodgers, and I've never intercepted Aaron Rodgers because nobody does. Like, it feels like the only time he gives up interceptions is when it's like a high-stakes situation. He's just like, throw it up, maybe something can happen. But that wasn't it in this game. They were still in contention when he was throwing it to the other team, and it was inexplicable sometimes because he's manipulating the middle safety is something that he does pretty well. He threw a deep ball right to the middle safety, and I was quite confused. Like, it's something I don't think I've ever seen Aaron Rodgers do, let alone do multiple times in the same game.
Washed. Sorry.
had
something
though,
in my throat. Jameis coming into this season, look, we know he sounded different. He looked different, and he looked different in all sorts of ways. I mean, in terms of his physique, he was lighter, stronger, but also his eyes, his actual ability to look got fixed by LASIK surgery. And so here he is throwing zero interceptions and five touchdowns with only 148 yards, which is not a thing anyone has ever done in NFL history. That few yards, that many touchdowns. So the question here to me is, can Jameis keep this up?
I don't know. I mean, he added the running attack to his game today. Like, I think that was the thing that we're not talking about because it's not five touchdowns and it's not 140 something yards, which is kind of eye popping numbers, one in a good way and one in just a surprising way. But his ability to run the ball on key situations on third downs and in the red zone, or at least threaten to run the ball, that kind of Taysom Hillization of his talent. Like, I think that is the that is a big story in this game that we're not going to talk about. But they really trust him, it seems like. There were certain situations where it felt like to me that Sean Payton was calling screen passes because he didn't necessarily trust Jameis. But he also was going for it on fourth down multiple times in the same drive. And the game is still in the balance. I think they were up. They only had like 10 points at the time, the first time they went for it on fourth down. And I was like, man. You either really trust your defense or you really trust your quarterback or both.
So spinning around to the AFC East, Dominique, in Foxborough, the Dolphins beat the Patriots 17-16, and they got outgained by the Patriots in this game. They got outgained by like 130 total yards. So just what you saw here, what did that tell you about the entire decision to cut Cam Newton and to start the rookie Mac Jones by Bill Belichick?
Nothing. Nothing. I mean, I think it was the right decision. Cutting Cam or not cutting him, like, I understand if you don't want a big personality in the locker room or if you're giving Cam an opportunity to catch on somewhere else. But I feel like Cam hasn't been Cam in a long time. I was high on Cam Newton before the start of last season. And then I watched what happened last season. So I was no longer very high on Cam Newton. And I saw this preseason that Mac Jones had a couple things that I think are special. The difficulty of playing quarterback in the Alabama situation is kind of hard to gauge, considering that there have been quarterbacks that have won national championships with Alabama and gone undrafted.
Yeah.
I was like, can he hit these tight windows? He showed that he could do that in the preseason. Also, can he read coverages quickly? Which, like, if your number one read is always open, you don't really have to read coverages. He showed that he could do that. So that was all I needed to see, especially when I tend to like to go with the young quarterback if you draft him in the first round, because the sooner you get him out there, the sooner he can get better. So this was an interesting debut for Mac Jones, but I don't think it wasn't even close to being bad enough for anyone to be considering regretting the decision that they made to start him.
Yeah, Mac Jones went 29 of 39 for 281 yards, a very accurate and efficient day. But you mentioned your love of starting the rookie quarterback. And so that brings us to the late game that we saw tonight, because that Rams-Bears game, I don't think we're surprised that the Rams won 34-14, if I may speak for both of us here. But I think of what our friend Bill Barnwell said on Twitter, which is that he can't figure out whether the Bears are wrong to sit Justin Fields, their rookie, because they look hopeless without him, or right to sit Justin Fields because it doesn't look like their line would be able to protect him. So I'm curious if you enjoyed what you saw tonight, which is the Bears starting Andy Dalton and then basically microdosing Justin Fields.
Yeah, I mean, I guess before the season, again, I like to start the rookie quarterback. And I also see that situation as one that feels hopeless without a Jordan-esque type of player coming in. And we don't know if Justin Fields is that. If I'm Justin Fields' parents, I'm like, hey, let's slow it down a little bit. But if I'm Justin Fields' teammate, I'm thinking, I'm out here, what are we doing? Like, Andy Dalton was respectable in this game, but they need more than that to compensate for the issues that they have on their offensive line in particular. The defense wasn't as good this game as we've come to expect the Bears' defense to be, but it's probably pretty hard to get your morale up and to keep going out on the field and to keep trying to get stops against a really talented offense when you look over at your offense and you don't have much faith that they can get the job done.
So basically, as Justin Fields' friend, you want no restrictions on his screen time, basically. It is time for him to be out there on the Jumbotron as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a friend who is also his teammate, absolutely.
Yeah, some parental controls.
If I'm not,
can we just make sure that
let's slow play it.
Let's wait
till we get some protections on his screen time. Can we get some limits? I don't know. Can we block certain apps?
It's very violent and often NSFW. So the other guy that everyone was very excited to see how he played was Matt Stafford. And Matt Stafford, he throws 3 touchdowns. He has 321 yards. All very good. All, again, kind of to be expected within this offense underneath Sean McVay. So I also want to acknowledge we've talked a lot about quarterbacks. So when you watch this game, I'm just curious.
Aaron Donald.
On the defense,
Aaron Donald.
Who do you think?
I'm sorry, like it's not revelatory, it's not new, but Aaron Donald was unblockable by 2 people, by 3 people.
Tell me what I don't get as a casual football normie about what Aaron Donald does that blows you, guy who played football, away.
I think that we talk about it so much that casual football normies might know how great he is, but I don't think you can really appreciate it until you watch somebody else who is good try to do what he does. Like, other all-pro defensive tackles cannot create the havoc that he does, and he's also, like, small. He's undersized. He didn't go, like, top of the first round, in part because people thought he was too small. And he uses quickness and leverage and his height to his advantage to make impacts on all types of plays, even if he doesn't get a ton of sacks, which he ended up getting a sack in this game. He's probably going to end up leading the league in sacks from the interior, which is something that never happens before Aaron Donald. But he just makes an impact because teams – plan for him, obviously. And so, like, you might dedicate 2 guys to him, and then you think, all right, well, we're deficient elsewhere because we need to dedicate 2 guys to him. You're still deficient there. It's the problem. That's what makes him so special, is you can game plan to stop him, but you can't really stop him.
Yeah, trying to game plan for someone but being unable to stop them. That's kind of how I feel when I try to ask you questions about football. Like, I think I know where I should be taking you, and then you're like...
I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
And then you're like, no, I'm going to go over here and do what I want. So, yes, you are the Aaron Donald, Dominique Foxworth of ESPN Daily.
I think, no. I think it's more like you feel like the Chiefs' defense. It's like, it doesn't matter what you do. We're going to win. As long as Foxworth is on the show, we're going to get this dub.
Dominique, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, after the break, we talked to Lewis Riddick, who is about to head into the booth for the first Monday Night Football matchup of the season.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, we want to close out today's show by looking ahead to tonight with our guy in the booth, Monday Night Football analyst Lewis Riddick. And Lewis, after this crazily different, unprecedented pandemic season last year, what are you most looking forward to about doing this game tonight?
The atmosphere. The atmosphere is what I missed the most last year. The atmosphere is what the coaches missed the most, and most importantly, what the players missed the most. And having been here last year, week two, when they played the Saints, and just how quiet it was, I expected to be a total 180. The players expected to be a total 180. I've heard people talk about the fact that week one so far has been very emotional for people.
Yeah.
When you hear, you know, the national anthem and your name's introduced and the fans are cheering, I think it's going to be emotional for me because none of us outside of the playoff game last year, Baltimore, Tennessee, as far as the booth is concerned, really know what it's like to be calling this broadcast with 65,000 fans, 70,000 fans. So we're going to find out tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, the fans that are around in Vegas, the transplanted black hole. How does the new black hole feel to you, Lewis, as you're out there right now?
I think once we get there and once we get in there and they really get, you know, get it cranked up, this is what I can really equate it to. Okay, when you say, well, what do I think it'll feel like? When I was at the Hall of Fame and they were having the Hall of Fame induction and Charles Woodson went last and Tom Flores was inducted as well, the longtime LA Raider, Oakland Raider coach. When those guys came up to give their speeches, the black hole was kind of like, there was a section of Raider fans there. I mean, it was pretty much dominated by the Steeler fans, but the Raider fans there were as loud as anyone. And it felt like a little bit like if you just focused in on them, it felt like you were back in Oakland, like you were back in Alameda, back in the Coliseum. Mm. And I expect it to be the same way because everything in the stadium, everything is black and silver, everything. And so it's going to be, look, I think it's just going to be wild. That's why I'm going to get there as early as I can and spend as much time down on the field as I can because I want to kind of, I want to experience all that.
Yeah, so outside of the crowd advantage, which I imagine to be absurd as you describe, I'm curious how you think the Raiders plan to do the thing that we ask everybody who talks about a Ravens game to figure out for us on this show. How do you stop Lamar Jackson at this point, Lewis?
Yeah, you know what? It's two things. It's great eyes, great discipline as far as gap control, assignment, responsibility. That's what it is. By great eyes, meaning this. Don't take them off of him. Don't look at any, I mean, read your keys, but you have to play with great vision with him because if you turn your back to him or you lose track of where he is, he's the guy who's like, he's an angle destroyer. He's a leverage destroyer. He's the kind of guy who has the kind of speed that if you think you can cheat him and not play him with the utmost respect, he'll burn you in a minute. And we've seen him do it over and over and over again. So that's number one. Number two, don't try to do your buddy's job. If you're a defensive lineman and you have the A gap between the center and guard, Don't try and play the B gap between the guard and tackle or the C gap between the tackle and tight end. Play yours, because he'll find the soft spot. And it's just, it's really, it's that simple, but it's actually pretty hard because this is a guy we don't see come along very often from a pound per pound athletic perspective. He's that unique. He demands that kind of attention. And the Raiders know it. We talk to him. They know it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the evolution of Lamar Jackson as somebody who has, of course, now infamously struggled in the postseason, but has dominated regular seasons as much as anybody at this point. Where are we in terms of our understanding of this guy? How much do we have left to learn about him? How much does he have left to prove to us?
Yeah, there's this whole notion that's been going around in the preseason about people figuring him out. They know how to stop him now. Well, considering the fact that he is still evolving, he is still evolving in particular as a guy who, when you figure out how or you have the discipline to stop him as far as the run game or keep him contained in the run game, he's evolving to where he doesn't need to rely on that anymore. And that's really what the greats of all time who were kind of similar to him wound up doing as far as their evolution too. And by that, I mean this. Really, the one that comes to mind is Steve Young. Steve Young was a great runner, a great athlete, one of the great athletes to play the quarterback position ever in the history of the NFL. What took Steve Young from being a great athlete, good quarterback, to being a good athlete, all-time great quarterback, was his evolution as far as being able to beat you from the pocket. And that's what Lamar is working on. And once he does that, when he runs simply because he feels like he wants to, not because he has to, you tell me what you're going to do with him. Then he's on his way to all-time greatness, which is what he's working on. Statistically, Pablo, it's been supported that every year that he has been in the league, his off-target percentage has decreased from the pocket. So there's the data's there that serves you that he's doing the right things. Now, you know what else they need to do? They need to get everybody else around him healthy. They need to get Rashad Bateman healthy. They need to get Miles Boykin healthy. They need to make sure this offensive line blocks and protects him in pass protection. All those kind of things that need to happen. But he's going to be fine.
But the health of this team, Lewis, I mean, that's the other major storyline heading into this, right? I mean, we go down the laundry list, and for Baltimore, it's J.K. Dobbins, their starting running back, Gus Edwards, their backup running back, Justice Hill, another backup running back, cornerback Marcus Peters. Like, these guys are all out for the season before this season even began, and there's even more than that in the full counting of it. What are you supposed to do with that? I mean, you were a player personnel guy. You were a team executive. What are you supposed to do with that when destiny deals you a hand like that?
Yeah, you know, first, you hope that you have built as much depth as you possibly can. Although there, you know, when you lose three running backs, you can't ever account for that. You can't have enough depth to kind of make up for
it's
that.
Crazy.
Right. So, but what's interesting is they have such a great system in Baltimore as far as the communication that exists between ownership, GM, head coach, offensive, defensive coordinator. So they know exactly what kind of players they want. So they have guys who are, you know, like Tyson Williams, who's going to play tomorrow night and who's going to start and probably play 75-80% of the snaps at running back. They're able to have guys like that who were on the practice squad a year ago, who are going to make the team anyway this year, who fits exactly what they want. 6 foot, 6'1", 225 pounds, probably runs low 4.5, high 4.4, shifty, elusive, catches the ball well out of the backfield, good pass protection. Don't be shocked, Pablo, if this kid comes out and if the Raiders aren't on top of the game, runs for 120, 130, has 4 or 5 catches for 40 yards, and people go, well, damn, where did this guy come from, right? Because that's what good organizations are able to do. On the defensive side, you know, Marcus Peters, I always describe him as one of the greatest thieves ever in the history of the NFL because he's just that when it comes to picking off the ball, you know, and to lose him is killer. I mean, it just is. Turnovers are at a premium in the NFL. You can't discount how important he is. But they have a guy named Anthony Averett who they draft. Well, let me think. In the fourth round, 2018, I believe it was. Yeah, fourth round in 18 out of Bama, who Don Martindale, their defensive coordinator, says, I think he has all pro potential. He just hasn't. I mean, he's been behind, you know, Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, so he's not going to start. but he's a really good player. We're going to see what happens tomorrow. They were carrying 11 defensive backs on their roster. They have a bunch of good-looking corners. Like, this is the all-get-off-the-bus team when you're talking about players. And then they have great coaches. So that's how you're able to hopefully survive this kind of thing. But it is a gut punch. It really tested, you know, just the humanity of this football team in terms of how bad you feel for guys like this when you have it go down in, you know, successive plays. It's just consecutive plays. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it's such a freak thing, man. You can't even wrap your mind around it. But this team's ready to roll, man. And I would bet that they come out swinging. Raiders better be ready to go. I can tell you that, despite all these players that are going to be missing.
So you played once upon a time for the guy on the other sideline. You played for John Gruden, right? You know this guy. He is now in his fourth year of his second tour as head coach of the Raiders, Lewis. It seems like he has more power in the organization, as much power as any head coach can imagine in the NFL at this point, also within the executive structure. But after going 8-8 last year, what do you think is on the line for John Gruden now? What do you expect from John Gruden this season?
What's on the line? I don't know. I mean, in many cases, a coach would be facing, you know, a serious job review process at the end of the year.
Right.
You wound up falling below 500. I don't know. He has a unique relationship with Mark Davis. He has a unique relationship with this organization dating back to when his first go around with this place in 1998, which is when I played for him. So I don't really know, like, if he's necessarily on shaky ground, so to speak, the hot seat, whatever the hell you want to call it. I just don't know. I don't necessarily think he is.
Yeah.
But what do I expect? Here's the interesting thing about the Raiders. They played playoff caliber football. They played playoff caliber football last year. They just faltered down the stretch. They played playoff caliber football on the offensive side. They played sub 500, maybe 3-13, but via 16 game schedule, 2-14 caliber defense. That's why he's now on his first, second, third, fourth defensive coordinator since he came back. So I expect them to play winning football offensively. Derek Carr is fantastic. I've always been a Derek Carr fan. I think he gets disrespected for reasons that are out of his control, mainly that he has Patrick Mahomes in his division now. But he has got one of the best young running backs in the NFL in Josh Jacobs. He has got maybe, arguably, the best tight end in the NFL as far as explosive playability in Darren Waller. Wide receiver, I mean, Darren, and I'll tell you this, Pablo. You put your eyes on Darren Waller in person, the dude is built like a Greek god when it comes to tight end. It's just like, wow. Just strapped together, no body fat. I mean, he's the perfect weapon, perfect. Henry Ruggs needs to play better. Brian Edwards needs to play better. Hunter Renfrow has to get even better. Yeah, true. But this team will win. They'll play winning football on offense. It's the defense that you worry about. Gus Bradley's under a lot of pressure. He'll say he's not. But of course he is, because of how bad they've been. They're going to be running a very simple scheme, the good old Seattle cover 3, that has some variations to it, designed to help players play fast, play quickly, not think too much, play with great detail, which is something that you need against Lamar Jackson. You don't need a whole lot of calls. You need to know how to do the calls you do have perfectly. Otherwise, he kills you. So we're going to put all that to the test. It's only going to be week one. We'll overreact like hell, I'm sure, when the game's
absolutely
over, one way or another, because that's what we do.
Yes.
But let's see what happens.
So, Lewis, after a day of just watching football this Sunday, and now you're, like, getting ready for this national event, a national holiday in and of itself on Monday night, do you, like, go for a run outside at some point to release your energy? Are you, like, pacing like a boxer in your room? How do you approach this?
Yeah, man. Well, it's 103 degrees outside, so I'm not going for a run anywhere. And I'll probably go out and take a walk, you know, and just kind of take in the sights and the sounds around here. Because I'll tell you this, it's crazy here, man. It's crazy. There are people everywhere. Yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
Lewis Riddick, now on your fourth day in Las Vegas, I'm excited for you to get away from the strip and get back into the booth.
No question, bro. I look forward to it myself.
Thank you, sir.
All righty.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.